This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Well, there's a first. I was so engrossed by R.S. Locke's analysis of the Harry and Meghan documentary, the first three episodes of which have dropped this morning on Netflix, I forgot to remind you about Mystery Hour. So I'm reminding you now. I'd like to say it gives you a better than usual opportunity to get through. And actually it does, but only for about the next 17 seconds or however long the delay is at the moment, because as soon as everyone realises it's Mystery Hour, the switchboard will explode in the way that it usually does. But if you want to take advantage of this brief, temporary and unfamiliar hiatus, then the number you need is 03456060973. If you have no idea what Mystery Hour is, you're in for a surprise that will probably be pleasant, but there is always an outside chance that it won't be pleasant at all. No more news, no more biting analysis, no more current affairs satire, no more grown-up stuff. At least for the next hour, because Mystery Hour is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. People ring in with questions and then other people ring in with answers. It really is as simple as that, but it is a heck of a lot more than the sum of its parts, if you'd allow. You're not allowed to look anything up, so if you hear somebody ask a question, don't Google it or get down your reference book. It is a sort of celebration of knowledge. That is point number one. Point number two, well, there isn't really a point number two. We don't like repetition, but we've kind of given up on that. There is a prize. There has been now for over a year, a prize of a brand spanking new, brilliant Mystery Hour board game, which would adorn any Christmas tree this festive season. It's a really, really, really good game. And whoever I enjoy the most during the course of the next 50 minutes or so will win a Mystery Hour board game. You can buy your own at mysteryhour.co.uk and you can find the full terms and conditions. I've never read them. I mean, what can the terms and conditions be if literally I choose a winner every week, more or less arbitrarily? I'm going to go and have a read of them after the show today. What on earth? We had to get lawyers involved and everything. It's a proper grown-up competition, but what are the terms and conditions? Probably just says, James's decision is final. And if anyone rings in to complain, then the producer will say, James has spoken. James has spoken. The decision is final. That's it. Those are the No. Go and read the terms and conditions. It's all important stuff, this, legally and whatever. 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we just play it now? If you don't know what's going on, you never will you? Except by listening, by witnessing, by enjoying. Pete's in Croydon. Pete, question or answer?
Well, your last guest was very interesting.
She was brilliant,
so I
wasn't
nearly
she?
Forgot. I had a question, but yeah, fortunately, I remember just in the nick of time.
Carry on.
Okay. So when the World Cup's on TV and the fans are singing "Sweet Caroline," does Neil Diamond get royalties?
No.
Definitive qualifications?
Yeah. Of course, he can't get royalties for that.
Why not?
Who would pay them?
Well, I would presume the TV channel
You get royalties. You mean because it's being broadcast?
Yeah.
No, I mean I can play little bits of music without having to pay any royalties.
I thought there was like an 8-second limit,
there's going to be other coverage as well, and that will include. I mean, I'm speaking very confidently, as is my wont. I haven't actually got a clue, but it just seems ridiculous, your suggestion.
Yeah, well, it's not a suggestion, it's a question.
The question contains the suggestion that he does get paid royalties.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm not convinced.
I'm 99% certain that he doesn't, and indeed nobody does, but you never know. Stranger things have happened. So, no, I'll put it on the board. Does Neil Diamond get any royalties when, you know, 50,000 people start singing Sweet Caroline for considerably longer than I would be allowed to play Sweet Caroline for on the radio without paying royalties to Neil Diamond?
Yep, but thank you.
You're on. 03456060973. I tell you what, I'll give you the money myself if he does get royalties for that. There was some very, very moving footage of Neil Diamond doing the rounds this week. I don't know if you saw it. He retired from public performance, I think, with Parkinson's. Forgive me if I've got that wrong. But there is now a Broadway show featuring his songs, and he turned up and did a little impromptu performance for the audience on the opening night of his Broadway show. Very, very, very moving. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Just jot down Pete's name in case he wins the game. Richard is in Vauxhall. Richard, question or answer?
It's a question. Hello. This is about patient confidentiality. If you were to go to a therapist and say something that traumatised the therapist, would they be allowed to go to another therapist and breach the confidentiality by talking to them?
They wouldn't be breaching the confidentiality because they wouldn't reveal any details of who it was that had been talking to them.
What if it was something really, really specific where, let's say you're a member of the royal family or something?
No, I mean, I don't know what you're thinking of specifically, but all therapists, as part of their training, do 2 hours of therapy a week themselves, and they do assessment, supervision, where they talk about their experiences as a therapist with, like, an Uber therapist, as it were. So, I mean, it is a part of the training to talk about what you learn when you are doing your therapy yourself.
Okay. Well, round of applause.
Yeah. Qualifications. My wife is currently training as a therapist. So I will take that round of applause. Thank you. Oh, it's a very good question. But I'm always intrigued as a Catholic by the confidentiality of the confessional and how many priests have been told about fairly serious crimes. Although, of course, now we know that many priests have committed fairly serious crimes and not gone to the authorities. Thank you, Richard. Pete's in Bristol. Pete, question or answer?
Hello, mate. I've got a question for you.
Carry on.
I've wondered this since I was a kid.
Everyone's called Pete today. What was the last call? What was the last caller called?
Pete
in Croydon, Pete in Bristol. I've got a Peter in Oxford coming up in a minute as well. What was the last caller called? Richard.
I remember the one before was Pete.
Yeah, no, I know. Sorry, three Petes. Where were we?
I was wondering what the bristles are for on the escalator that are about ankle height. Coming out the side of the elevator. Do you know those, like, bristle brushes that are about ankle height? I personally use them to polish my shoes when I go down the escalator.
I do too. Well, I mean, I wear trainers mostly these days, but if I'm ever wearing grown-up shoes, I give them a quick buff.
Yeah, I mean, if it's for that, then I'll be amazed. But
surely it's to stop you sticking some... It's to stop stuff falling into the mechanics.
It gets the mud off your trainers or shoes, so it's more likely for stuff to fall.
But it's not going to go down the sides. It's going to go down to the bottom or the top where there is a receptacle or where the design accommodates detritus.
Perhaps, but there's, like, on more modern fancy escalators, they don't have the bristles.
It's not a great phone line now. We're losing the phone line now. I think you said on more modern escalators you don't have the bristles, and that might just be a design. I don't know. I'm doing it. I don't know why. I'm doing it again. I've got no idea, is the short answer, any more than I know whether or not Neil Diamond gets royalties for football crowd singing, whatchamacallit, Sweet Caroline. Yeah, I'm distracted because Chris Evans is in touch, which is becoming a Mystery Hour tradition. He's now the proud recipient of a Mystery Hour board game, I can tell you. He points out that Tyson Fury sang the whole of American Pie at Wembley Stadium after annihilating Dillian White. So would Don McLean get a royalty in that circumstance? I don't know what the and if he doesn't know with his broadcasting pedigree, then nobody will know except somebody listening to this who is an absolute specialist on the question of royalties and public performance. We also need someone who's a specialist on bristles on escalators or just escalators in general. What are the bristles for on the sides? Because it can't possibly be actually designed for impromptu shoe polishing, can it? It's coming up to 12:15. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:17 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Does an artist get any royalties when a crowd sings their songs, or indeed when an individual sings their songs out of performance context, for example, after a boxing match? I think we went definitive on the therapist confidentiality question because by dint of having supervisors, you know that there is no confidentiality. Some people have gone a little further. The confidentiality isn't just between the patient and therapist. It includes the organisation the therapist works for. And so all of their colleagues, qualifications, I've had a lot of therapy and dated a therapist. That's not me, Robert. That's the texter that's come in. And what are the bristles for on the side of the escalators? So if you're tuning in for the first time today, you get the picture. Serious, silly, anything you fancy. Gary's in Belfast. Gary, question or answer?
Hello, James. Hello. I have an answer.
Fantastic.
For the public, for singing of Neil Young.
Oh, yeah. Neil Diamond, actually. But it all stays. No, but it doesn't matter, does it? Because it's not going to be a different rule for Neil Young, is it?
True. So basically, he wouldn't make a royalty for that because it's not an organised public performance or a public broadcast.
So the key word is organised.
Yeah, so, I mean, ordinarily venues, stadiums, venues, whatever, they pay a licence fee and that covers the performance of music in their venues.
Yeah.
But typically it's all organised, so whoever is performing the song, if they're playing a recording or if a band is playing live or whatever, they will send a return to a royalty collection agency to say, this is what was performed, this is who wrote it, this is who needs to get the royalties, and that's not going to happen for a crowd just...
But it would happen for the halftime entertainment.
For the halftime entertainment, it would, if the stadium was to perform a song live, if you hear...
I think that Chesney Hawkes performed I Am the One and Only during halftime of the England-Wales game.
Yeah, so then he will get a royalty for that because he will have claimed that he did a live performance of his song in front of that many people.
And Tyson Fury singing American Pie in its entirety at Wembley after defeating Dillian White, no royalty there because it wasn't organised and or scheduled is probably the word we're looking for. If it's impromptu, there's no royalties.
Pretty much. But even if somebody was to turn around and say, well, he sang my whole song at the thing, they could then look at it and say, okay, well, a licence fee has been paid, so something could theoretically be organised for it, but ordinarily, no, it wouldn't warrant a royalty.
Okay. And it, I mean, the royalties, someone else is telling me, come in a sort of pot form. So you don't, there's not an algorithm. You just get a distribution of fees in this country via the Performing Rights Society.
Exactly. So every venue pays their money. It all goes into a giant pot.
And then you will qualify for a slice of the pot, a bit of the pot,
exactly.
if your song has been sung as part of the scheduled event.
Yes, and it depends on size of venue, size of artist, size of song,
how
much you get.
What about a scheduled performance at which the performer goes off script and decides to accept requests from the crowd or something like that?
Again, they can do that, and then they just have to register the work or register the performance with the performing.
But not if it's a boxer or a crowd, only if it is a performer, in other words.
I think
we've covered it. People may want to add to what you've said, but I'm happy with your answer. What are your qualifications?
I work for a performing rights society in Ireland.
Crikey, that'll do. Have a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. David's in Medway. David, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
I've been pondering this for many years. When you see circus acts throw axes at a target, quite often with the lady standing there, legs and arms out, it always lands point first. And when, as a kid, I used to throw knives at targets and they land point first. Why does it always land point first and never drop to the floor, considering the axe is going 360 degrees and at some point the handle, the blunt part...
Have you ever done it yourself?
I've done it myself, yeah.
And it always sticks?
It always sticks. Or a balanced knife, you know, pen knives, anything you're throwing like that.
No, it doesn't always stick, though.
It does.
It doesn't.
When was the last circus performer you saw on Sally?
No, the circus performers always stick because they've practiced a lot. But I'm thinking if you did
it. Yes, but it's still travelling 360 degrees.
Yes, but that's a bit like saying, why don't jugglers ever drop the balls in the circus?
No, I don't agree.
What do you mean you don't agree? It's not an argument. Why don't jugglers ever drop their ball? I've never seen a juggler drop their balls at a professional performance.
I've seen jugglers drop their balls.
And somebody has seen an axe thrower drop their axe.
I've never seen it.
How many performances have you watched?
Oh, quite a few.
Yeah, how many?
Blindfolded. They do it blindfolded as well. So why doesn't the pointy bit?
Because of all the training that they do.
What about when I do it, when I throw a knife?
You've been very lucky. You've been very... Go and do it now. Have you got a knife on you now?
That's all it is. Okay, if that's all it is, I accept your answer.
Well, it's not accepting my... Well, all right, that's very gracious of you, but there's no way that by the laws of physics that it is guaranteed that an axe or a knife is going to stick blade first in a piece of wood.
Well, that's why I'm always wondering why it...
Well, you've lived a charmed life, Dave. You've lived a charmed life. You've never, ever seen a knife or an axe thrown at a wall or a door and not stick in it and go, dong, yong, 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 like that.
No, it always sticks in.
That's incredible. Maybe you're magnetic.
There you go.
I'm going to take a round of applause for this, by the way.
No, I'm not accepting that yet. Okay.
I don't care. There is no earthly... I mean, I could do it now. I could prove it to you now if you just...
Okay. Why? Let's rephrase the question. Why does the majority of the time does it always stick point first?
Well, because it's heavy.
Yeah, but it's still spinning 360 degrees. Handle is still...
Well, I don't think if you did it 50 times, I think you'd be looking at a 25-25, roughly a 25-25 breakdown.
I don't agree.
All right. Okay, well, I'll let you have that then. Is it? Okay. Is it? But there's no earthly way that the... I can't believe I'm letting you change your question halfway through. breaking the habit of a lifetime here. But there's no earthly way that you are guaranteed... For the axe. Here you go. Victor. Yeah. All right, Victor's listening in New York. Ready for this?
Okay.
I went axe throwing last night, he says. Half the axes didn't stick. Possibly more than half.
Send me a video.
All right, I won't take a round of applause then, you spoil sport. Question four, axes. From David in Medway. Mark's in Colindale. Mark, question or answer?
I have an answer.
Carry on, Mark.
It's about bristles and escalators. But first, I've seen loads of things on the internet of people throwing axes at things and them bouncing back.
Yeah,
so
I have too, but don't... Oi, get back in your box, all right? Get back in your lane. You can't come on here and start moving all over the shop like that. Honestly.
Okay. Bristles and escalators, anyway, are there purely for safety? They are as a barrier between you and the edge of the escalator. They can't have anything fixed on the escalator because you might get snagged in that. So the bristle, you will move through them, but you can feel them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that is simply it.
Yeah. And what would happen if it wasn't there? People would get their shoelaces caught in the mechanisms or something like that.
You get your shoelaces, people, I see it all the time, hanging their jackets down, and it's the bristles that stop them getting snagged in the side.
Yeah. There you go. Qualifications?
Yeah. I work for the Underground. They tell us that in training. In fact, on the Underground, every single escalator is checked every morning for various things, but one of them is to make sure the bristles are there.
Beautifully done. Round of applause for Mark. And thank you for all the work that you do on our behalf.
That's very kind.
Yeah, I love the London Underground. It's one of my favourite things about living in London. Thank you, Mark. Katie is in Birmingham. Katie, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
It's an answer to the therapy question.
Really? I thought I'd covered that.
I disagree.
Okay, carry on.
Just a little.
No, I'm sure. I mean, I did it secondhand anyway.
If somebody discloses something to us that is disturbing, if it triggers something in us, that's what we take to supervision, to our clinical supervisor, not an Uber therapist. And we discuss that. We don't disclose any identifiable details about the person. And it's not necessarily what they went through. It's about how it's triggered something in us, how we're working with it.
I think that's what I said, but I'm gonna give you the round of applause anyway.
Thank you.
Because you said it better, I think. and you're right. It's you're receiving therapy with your supervisor. You're not analysing the therapy you've done with somebody else. So it is a distinction that's important to draw.
Not quite.
Go on.
So we should have personal therapy.
Yes.
And therapists should have personal therapy. You do have to have a certain amount through training.
Sure.
And should continue that. But supervision is about how we're working.
How
with
you
it.
Are doing your job as a therapist with that
there
client.
There are times when we have to disclose information, contactable information. They are few and far between, and that's discussed with the client beforehand so they know, like before the therapy starts, so they know what the parameters are. and most therapists, myself certainly, if that was becoming apparent that I might have to disclose that, you know, break confidentiality, then I would discuss that with them first, if that was possible.
Yeah, it's a perfect answer. And you've already told me what your qualifications are, but I have to go through the motions. What are your qualifications, Katie?
I'm a therapist in private practice.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. Round of applause for
Thank
Katie.
You.
Lovely stuff.
Thank you.
Next to there we go. 28 after 12, Robert is in Malden. Robert, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
What's the difference between an evergreen and a deciduous tree? I don't mean that the leaves come off. I mean, what causes an evergreen tree to keep its leaves and a deciduous tree to lose its leaves?
You spoiled my joke there. Well, one of them's evergreen and one of them isn't, mate. okay, so
they can
what
next to each other in a forest?
They can.
So, yeah, what's the difference?
You want the botanics of it, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Why do some shed their leaves and others don't?
Leaves.
Yeah, I can't believe we've never had that before, which means we probably have, and I've forgotten because I'm so very old. But I shall find out for you. Why do some trees shed their leaves and others not? 03, thank you, Robert. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Madeline is in. Shall I squeeze in Madeline in Carshalton and get another question on the board? Question or answer, Madeline?
It's a question.
Carry on.
Okay, so you see goose fat for sale everywhere in the supermarkets.
Well, maybe in the sort of supermarkets you go to, Madeline, but I'm not sure. No, all right, fair enough. Carry on.
Well, you see goose fat for sale.
You do.
You never see goose meat.
You don't, it's true.
What happens to the rest of the goose?
I had a feeling that was going to be the question that followed upon this. It may be that there are other countries where goose is quite readily available.
Yeah, possible.
It'd be cooked as well, wouldn't it, if they've rendered all the fat off it?
Yeah. I mean, I have a half-baked hypothesis if you've got time.
Of course I do. Well, I don't actually, but that's never stopped me before.
Okay, I read a couple of days ago, and this wasn't a massive surprise, geese and ducks are actually the same species, and whether it's a goose or a duck is completely arbitrary. So I wondered if maybe the goose meat ends up being sold as duck.
As duck, and therefore, you know, we do get through quite a lot of duck in Chinese food and similar. So it could be that. Better a half-baked thesis or hypothesis than a half-baked goose, Madeline. Some culinary advice for you there. Yes, exactly that. Botulism and similar. I find out for you. You do buy goose at roast potatoes, isn't it? One of the very, very few galling aspects of having vegetarians in the family is that either come Christmas, I either do two, because I always cook Christmas lunch, I either do two sets of potatoes or I eschew the goose fat for the vegetarians in the family. 12:30 is the time. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
If you're worried that your mortgage payments could go up, it's helpful to know that you can arrange to switch your Barclays mortgage up to 180 days before your current one ends. One way you can do this is in the Barclays app. Your new rate will then apply as soon as your existing rate expires. Simple. For more money help, including other ways to switch your mortgage, search Barclays Cost of Living. Barclays. Make money work for you. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
26 minutes to one. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are still seeking to find out. Actually, we've done that and we've done that. And so, why do axes? Well, there's a lot of controversy about this question, to be honest. Here's another one. Having been axe throwing, I can categorically say they do not always stick in the board. In my one experience, it was about 15%. David was adamant that if you throw an axe, it will always hit the board blade first. I thought that was ridiculous, frankly, but he was not sympathetic to my dismissal of his question, so it remains on the board. So we changed it slightly to why does it largely, he thinks large. I'm not convinced, but anyway. Why do some trees shed their leaves while other trees don't? And where's all the goose meat, given that goose fat is so readily available? There are two phone lines free for the first time since 12:05 even. Well, no, actually 10:05 to be fair, but anyway, 03456060973 if you want to get. There's no point sending me a text saying I can't get through. There's literally nothing I can do about it. What do you think I'm going to do, ring you back just to find out what it is you want to say? I've got no control over anything, even my own words. John's at Gatwick. John, question or answer?
Oh, it's such a pleasure to speak to you. Question, please.
Likewise. Carry on, John.
A fly can fly high, but how high can a fly fly?
How high can a fly fly?
Yeah. He can fly high.
He can fly high, but how high?
How high, yeah.
Can a fly fly? You're from the Republic of Ireland, are you?
I am, yeah.
It's almost a shame you're not from the north, just for what that accent would do to this question. Hi, can a fly fly?
I know you've just been over there, so...
I have. I think I'm over again in February as it goes. We will find out for each other. Hi, can a fly fly? 03456060973 is the number that you need. Sam's in Bracknell. Sam, question or answer?
I have an answer.
Carry on, Sam.
So I have an answer to the axe throwing question. Fantastic. So if you get the right distance from the target from where you're throwing, relative to the length of the blade of the handle of the axe, it rotates a single time, and pretty much every single time it will stick into the board.
So incredibly,
takes a little bit of practice to get to that point.
And if you're performing it in a circus, you're going to have your mark delineated fairly clearly, aren't you, on the floor?
Absolutely, yeah.
So David's question was actually not as daft as it sounded.
No.
It would be almost impossible, throwing from the right position. It would be very, very difficult not to actually successfully plant the axe in the board.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, I love that. What are your qualifications?
I'm an axe throwing instructor at an outdoor activity type place.
Really?
I am.
What happens when you get fired? Do they give you the axe?
I'll throw an axe. Well, I certainly hope not.
How about aiming? How easy is it to train people to... you train on both aiming and throwing.
Yes.
Because you've got to be able to hit a target, aiming, not just a wall. You want to hit a smaller target.
That's right.
All right.
The distance between the throwing line and the targets is not particularly very long.
No.
So if you're...
Because it's one rotation. Do you go hardcore and do more than one rotation, or would that just be madness?
It's possible.
Have you done it?
I've done it, yeah, but out of hours sort of thing.
Off-piece, unofficial, VIP.
Unofficial ones, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. First
throwing
ruler.
Two at the same time and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's something like Game of Thrones. I have got in my hand a wooden knife, like a knife made of wood. It has no blade.
Okay.
And if I were to throw it at the lens, at the camera that films me going viral and everything, could you give me any tips that would make me more likely to actually hit the lens?
Well, I can't speak too much on knife throwing, I'm afraid.
Really? They don't just go hand in hand.
Well, I wouldn't think so, because if you think about the shape of the axe and the way that it's weighted...
But the principle of throwing a bladed... All right, Einstein, I'm thinking about the principle of throwing a bladed object. I presumed that if you were a professional axe-throwing instructor, you'd have a bit of a sideline in chucking knives.
I'd imagine it's fairly similar.
Different-shaped sticks with bits of metal on them, man.
Yeah, well, look at the shape of an axe. It's more L-shapes.
Yeah, it's a completely different discipline. I understand. I mean, there are, I presume, quite a lot of axe-throwing instructors around.
Oh, yes. They're all over the place.
Some people suggesting you deserve a Ray Liotta, but, I mean, that's just ridiculous. So you can't give me any advice at all on whether or not I can hit the camera with this wooden knife?
I couldn't possibly. And even if I could, I don't think I would want to, just in case you hurt somebody.
It's made of wood. It's like a picnic knife, like the thing you get in school dinners or something like that. It's not going to hurt anybody. And anyway, the room is empty.
Oh, well, in that case, that's probably not going to go very far at all.
Well, that's what Keith said. He said, I won't even reach the camera.
No.
Right, I'm going to try it now, live on the radio. This is the kind of stuff, this is why I win all those awards. I don't actually win any awards, but if I did, this would be why. Ready? Do you want to give me a pep talk?
Here you go. So try and keep your wrist nice and relaxed, and keep your elbow pointing in the direction you want it to go.
Oh, well, that's good advice.
And then just allow your arm to kind of follow the line down as you go.
Should I stand up, do you think?
It'll probably help, but if it's only a tiny knife like that, I don't think it'll make too much difference.
All right, my voice might get a little bit distant now as I step further away from the microphone. I'm going to hit the lens bang on. Oh, flipping it. I've got a bit of a twinge. I should have stretched, Sam. I should have done some. Do you stretch before you throw axes?
We recommend it.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I just got a twinge. Right, ready? Quiet, please, Sam, now. Trying to concentrate. Yeah, it went like about 4 foot to the left because it's so light and flimsy.
I say, well, you need a heavier knife, I think.
You should have talked me out of that, Keith. I can't do a heavier knife. I could actually damage the camera then. Does he get a round? Of course he gets a round of applause for Sam, please. I think I need some lessons, mate. Seriously. I might start with the knives and work my way up to the axes. Andy's in St. Austell. Andy, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Andy.
When you have a tooth pulled, yes. The nerves and the pain receptors know it's gone and that's the end of it.
Mm.
However, when you suffer an amputation, you can still feel you get phantom sensations, you can get pains in it. Why is that? Why do the nerves not understand one thing's gone, but they can understand another has?
How do you know that this is true?
I've had a finger amputated, and I run an online group for people who've suffered similar hand problems.
But how do you know that people don't have, when they have a tooth taken out?
Obviously you get all the pain from a toothache and all that.
Yeah.
Once you have the tooth taken out, personally, I've never suffered.
Yeah, but the tooth itself hasn't got. I mean, the tooth itself is inanimate, isn't it?
Yeah, but to feel the pain, presumably anyway, it's connected to a nerve, and that nerve's telling you that there's an injury.
Oh, I was about to say the nerve dies, but that doesn't answer your question because your nerves have been removed from the finger. I know that part of the answer, and you'll probably already know this, is that none of us feel anything in our fingers ever. What we actually do is feel it in our brain.
Yes. Yeah.
So your brain hasn't changed, even though your finger has been removed. Can I ask which finger it was? Do people get
Index finger.
How do you swear?
Well, it actually makes it easier because it means the middle one's a little more prominent.
Oh, that one, it was your index. Yeah, of course it is. So you do the. You can't do the Churchill, but you can do You can do the Anglo-Saxon version. The bird, exactly that. All right, I'll find out for you. So, do you want to know why you? Because you, I think you know why you get phantom feelings. You want to know why you don't get phantom feelings in your teeth.
Yeah, I mean, I can get feelings sometimes as though there's a needle being stuck into the end of my finger.
Good grief, really?
But it never feels like that on any of... I mean, it's a bit difficult to, because as soon as you think about your fingers, your legs, whatever, you can feel them.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting there watching TV, you're not aware of your fingers.
No, you're not.
Unless something actually happens to them, you're not aware of
Unless
that.
You're watching Countdown and you're using them to count.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or Ted Rogers.
Dusty Bin.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. 3-2-1. Ted Rogers, well done. I will find out for you. But question, why do I get phantom feelings in my finger? Or is it, why do I get phantom feelings in my finger but not in my teeth? Because they might be two different answers.
Yeah. Another question,
well,
I suppose.
Exactly. Well, we'll work it out. If anybody knows the answer, I'll leave it with me, Andy. All right, I've got it covered.
Thank you, James.
No, thank you, mate. Take care. I should ask why. Sorry, is that rude? It's curiosity. What happened to your finger? Was it illness or did you injure it?
No, it's fine. I'm quite happy with it. It's over 8 years now. I was working in a factory.
Yeah.
And we had a 900-litre mixing bowl.
Whoa.
We were putting it back into its frame and we did the old 3-2-1 drop and I wasn't quite quick enough. Yeah, it stung a little bit.
I bet it did. Well, you live to tell the tale. I'll tell you what, you've headed into the lead for the free mystery hour game with that story. That's going to take some beating. I have to have a heart of stone not to give it to Andy. Good Lord. It's coming up to 12:45. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. Special mention to Stephen, who's been in touch. He's just tweeted, I was in a panto with Ted Rogers' son. Thanks for keeping us in the loop, Stephen. And there was actually a truly hilarious tweet earlier. Hopefully I'll remember to share it with you before I hand over to Sheila at 1 o'clock. But here's a good one. It was a brilliant reason for the Ted Rogers name check. You're right, Ian. That was superb contribution from Andy. What was I going to say? It's gone, sorry. Diane's in Colchester. Diane, question or answer?
A question.
Carry on.
you'll probably know the answer to this, actually. But I called my daughter Charlotte, and I just want to know why we say sh instead of ch. Charlotte.
Why do you think I would know the answer to that?
I just thought it was quite a simple question that probably a lot of people knew.
I just
often wondered why we pronounce it.
But we do, I mean, so you say sharabank, as for a, you know, like a coach, it's a sharabank, isn't it?
Never heard of that one.
I'm trying to think of something you have heard of. Charlene, you say Charlene, you don't say Charlene. You say chitty chitty bang bang, you don't say, well, that would be a unfortunate thing to say on the radio, wouldn't it? It's a good job I was on my toes for that one. I just don't think there's an answer, is the thing. I mean, it comes from the French, I imagine, so probably that's...
Oh, I guess that's what it is then. I guess it's the way the French pronounce it.
It will be, yeah, like cher and char. Charcuterie. It's a good job we didn't call it charcuterie. That would be champagne, not champagne. So there you go. That's it. We've done it. We've done it, Diane. We've done it. We've worked it out. It's the French. It comes from the French.
It's the French. It's all their fault.
It's all their fault. Round of applause for Diane and me, please. We'll share this one because it's Christmas. Thank you, Diane. 12:50 is the time. Joe's in Birmingham. Joe, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's to the goose question.
Yes.
And you can buy goose to eat. You can buy full, like, birds. You can buy a crown of goose.
I know.
So the fat will just get taken off when it gets sold.
Oh, bless you. You've misunderstood the question.
Have I?
Yes.
Right.
Well, because there's so much goose fat available.
Yeah.
And
but there's presumably a lot of goose eaten by certain people.
But who?
Well, people who like geese.
Goose. But there isn't, though, is there? Because you just said yourself, I've cooked a goose before, and there's a lot of fat comes off it, actually, which might be part of the answer to the question. But there seems to be... The basis of the question from Madeline was fairly, I think, clear. There seems to be way more goose fat available than there is a commensurate amount of goose meat for sale.
Well, I imagine possibly goose goes into, like, maybe dog food.
Well, that was... That would be an answer if you knew that, but you don't.
I don't know that.
Well, I can sit here and speculate, can't I? So you've rung in to tell me that it is possible to buy a goose.
Yeah?
But I didn't need you to tell me that.
It might have given her an answer.
I'm feeling ungrateful now. I bought a goose. Everyone knows you can buy a goose. Not as a pet, as a dinner. Everyone knows you can buy a goose. Anyway, give him a round of applause. We've been a good sport. It's not his fault he got on air. It's yours. Paul's in Oxford. Paul, actually, this made me laugh as well. Listen, being dismayed that Sam wasn't also adept at knife throwing, despite being an axe thrower, is like being dismayed that Jockey Wilson was rubbish at the javelin. It's not like that at all. Paul's in Oxford. Paul, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why is it the majority of elderly care homes are named after some sort of tree?
What? They're not.
Majority of them are.
What, the majority that you've seen in the last 10 minutes?
No, over the course of a few months since I've started listening to this segment.
Right, like, so you're just driving around and every time you notice a care home, it happens to be named after a tree?
Yeah.
Right, like what? Part of the cedars. What else?
Yeah, Cedar Lodge.
Yeah.
Pine House.
You have not in your life encountered an old people's home called Pine House.
Woodside definitely.
Woodside's not Cedar named Lodge. After a tree. You already said Cedar Lodge.
There's a couple that I've seen, but normally they aren't. Well, Google it.
You Google it. I'm not allowed to. Working on the frankly ridiculous premise that your question is accurate, the answer is that it conjures up nice imagery.
Okay. Or it's not just where we throw the old wood.
No, it's definitely not that. It conjures up, it makes you think. So, you know, you might call it. I'll give you a very good example, Paul. Actually, There was a leisure centre in Kidderminster many moons ago, and it was known as the Forest Glades Leisure Centre, despite being in the middle of Kidderminster, which is also in Wyre Forest, so there were two reasons. But you see Forest Glades, doesn't that conjure up nice images?
It does, yes.
It was on a ring road in Kidderminster. It was about as sylvan as a multi-storey car park, but it was called the Forest Glades, and it all sounds... So that's why. So you call it, you know, it's
I'll formulate a list and I'll
yeah,
I'll
get back in touch when you've got... You've got one call coming for you. I don't know who sent that in. Thank you. Stephen's in Edgware. Stephen, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Stephen.
I want to answer the question about why don't people get phantom tooth pain?
Yes.
And the answer is they do.
Oh.
So, it's a well-known phenomenon. It's called atypical facial pain, and there's actually I don't know if it's still there, but there's a special clinic for that problem at the Eastman Dental Hospital in Gray's Inn Road.
Well,
and,
I know.
I've actually sent several patients there for diagnosis and treatment. So it's,
And it's post-removal?
Not necessarily. It can be post-removal. So then if it's post-removal, they call it phantom tooth pain.
Wow.
Whereas sometimes you can get people turning up that... the classic scenario is you have a patient with several missing teeth in their mouth and the pain just seems to flip from tooth to tooth.
Good Lord.
And it's not until the dentist realises that something's up that they actually stop them ending up with no teeth.
Well,
but it's a real phenomenon, and it really happens.
And I think you've given us the answer to the next question already, but I shall go through the motions. What are your qualifications?
I'm a dentist.
It's not the answer Andy was looking for, but it's definitive.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
No,
him,
it's
but
not.
No, it's a real thing. It's
yeah,
real thing.
I thought it might be, actually. That was my initial suspicion.
There's a whole family of things. You can get tooth pain. You can get there's another thing called burning mouth syndrome, where the patient's mouth is burning. And it's usually a diagnosis of last resort.
Yeah, I'm
sure. So you've excluded everything else, and you come to the conclusion that it's not a local problem. It's more to do with the brain pathways of pain that are causing the problem rather than the actual disease itself.
Beautifully done. And all of that extra info as well. Round of applause for Stephen.
Thank you.
I've got the giggles already. Someone just texted in, better pine house than pine box, I reckon. Nigel's in Farnborough. Nigel, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Which one? There's not many left, is there?
The ho-hi can a fly fly.
Hi-hi can a fly fly. Come
on. It's not necessarily... I've been waiting for years to find something which my limited knowledge can actually bring something to bear on this on these questions. And it's not so much to do with how high a fly can fly of its own power. It's more to do with the atmosphere and thermals.
Okay.
In the atmosphere.
Yes.
And the answer to that question is they get entrained in thermals, which are rising columns of air. And the limit is generally towards cloud base, which on a good summer's day could be as much as, well, this summer was exceptional. We had cloud base in the region of sort of 11,000 feet on many days. But that's not the end of it. The rising columns of air continue into the cloud and accelerate when they get in the cloud, and the flies would continue going up, and if it were a thunderstorm cloud, that could be several multiples of tens of thousands of feet up to 50,000-60,000 feet.
Sensational.
By which time the fly is pretty much dead and pre-frozen.
John might object to that because the fly's not flying if it's dead.
Well, it's
or is it? Is it flying? Is a dead fly flying? If it's flying, if it's in the sky.
Well, I would argue that flying, sort of falling upwards, is probably akin to flying.
Yeah, and it is an inanimate object, but so is an aeroplane.
Well, yes, and in many cases, particularly when I'm at the controls, it's the pilot is that as well.
And there it is—the clue to the next answer. What are your qualifications, Nigel?
I'm a glider pilot and a member of the British team.
Oh, sensational. Round of applause for Nigel.
Thank you, sir.
How can you be in a team? How do you do competitive gliding?
We race around, around courses.
Many
times, upwards of three or four and sometimes
yeah,
five.
I can't believe I asked that. I just thought it might be who can stay up the longest.
No.
No, thank you, Nigel. Thank you for being so gentle with me. Jackson Sheffield, final question, answer to which, Jack, quick.
Answer, goose fat.
Oh, yes.
We import it all from France.
All the fat. And that. Oh, and then we're looking at foie gras, and they eat more geese than we do. There it is. So there it is. It's all for sale in France. That's two answers to which the answer is the French. The one about why do we pronounce Charlotte as Charlotte instead of Charlotte, and where does all the geese go? Qualifications?
I've used a lot of goose fat. I've never seen a jar that says Sausage UK on it.
It's always from France.
Yep.
Or other countries where goose is regularly eaten. Round of applause for Jack. Round of applause for Jack.
Thank you.
No, thank you. It's got to be Andy for the game, but it could have been anyone this week. That was a tight, tight feel. But, you know, Andy, with the tail of his amputated finger, is going to say the last word of the week. They're all Oak people's homes. Stop it now. That's it for today. You can download the show on Global Player. You can listen on Catch Up. You can fast forward, as you know, on Catch Up as well. That's exciting. No one would ever fast forward Sheila Fogarty.
Absolutely.
Get it from your app store or from globalplayer.com. Tom will be here at 4. Sheila is here now.